naar huilen, het kloot. Bid van bottle of guru. Oh, my genny press, oh, my mukates. Troy for beam and feather. Or in the garret in the tenon, Troy, your and a ride. Demon beam, a proud new deal in Carvet land near Nevoy. Hey, la la.
Croeso, and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to steal your heart, escape the locks of boredom, and free you from the shackles of non-Welsh history. And today, you are joined by your constant thief of the nights, your two countryside boys, me, Franks, and...
Oh, me, Jack. Sorry, I didn't realise you were teeing me up then.
Tea leaf thief. That's
There we are, another link. Already bashing out the links.
Yeah. We're back with another true crime drama for you. And one of our last true crime ones, not sure if it's the right order, but we did The Hump, didn't we? We did Murray the
Hump.
We did. And someone got in touch with us. Actually not just someone, a Patreon member, Jana Banana. Got in touch and said that. So, do you remember in last week's episode, Murray moved to Norman and moved to Pink, and we said two in the pink, one in the stink.
Yeah, of course. How could I forget? Yeah,
she said she had family from Pink, and she said it's really rubbish there. But she also is seventh cousin twice removed from Mary Brindle, the wife of Murray the Hump, and she sent me this tree. Like, she went on like ancestry.com. And she showed me that she's related. So we have someone with an in to the Chicago outfit.
You're saying it like it's our in. So when we eventually move to America, the land of opportunity.
Yeah. Or she could put a hit out on some rival podcast.
I got a few in mind now you mention it. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a couple of you little snarks. That's it.
Keep watching. Yeah, watch yourselves, guys.
How cool is that, though?
That's amazing. That Jana Banana, bloody hell, what a woman. She's like the last time I think we talk about her. We're on about how like she's a vigilante nurse. I mean we're extrapolating the truth there. Yeah.
Yeah. She shoots you up and heals you.
I can't remember which episode it was, but anyone who's not listened, go back and listen to that. We basically made up an 80s cop drama about her, where she's nurse by day, like a contract killer by night.
Yeah, and she's actually going to be on. We're going to do a Patreon episode. Her Patreon episode's coming up next, I think. So we do a little deep dive.
Yes, we're doing it on her hometown episode, aren't we? So we'll do a little deep dive into Miss Banana herself.
Should we plug the Patreon early up front? So if you join our Patreon, we will update these tiers soon. But we have three tiers. One is four tiers. One is free. You just get to get involved in some of the polls and stuff. We have a £1 tier, which you don't get any perks, but you do help us keep the lights on, and you get a shout out, and we very much appreciate them an awful lot. Tier two is £5 a month, and you get two bonus episodes every month. And we've not missed a single one. And I'm a Patreon for a few things, and loads of times they just don't put anything out. They're like, "Oh, sorry, guys," but we've never missed. Yeah,
I finally mellowed out on the social contract that is the Patreon. Because when we first started, you might have heard us discussing it before, listeners. Yeah. But Frank's always been like, "You don't have to freak out so much." So I was like, "They're gonna come down on us like a ton of bricks if we don't deliver on this." It's a social contract, Franks.
Yeah, but like, I'm on a couple of people's Patreons, and they'll be like, "Oh, sorry, we've not done anything for the last month." And we do two episodes a month, and they range from they're quite mad. Some of them like we build a Welsh theme park, and it's like and in the theme park we have different areas based on Welsh history. We do like more offbeat silly stuff, but then we also do stuff for our third tier, which is £10 a month. You get the two bonus episodes, you get personalized artwork. After 3 months, you get a dedicated episode. We do research on your hometown to find out where you're from and look into all that stuff. And then after 6 months, we turn you into a Welsh legend and we make up a Mabinogion tale for you. And we did two the other day, which were really fun.
Fun to write, actually. I enjoyed them, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to give a shout-out to another?
Speaking of the Patreon, we wanted to give a shout out to one of our producers. That's another perk. If you're on the Taylor tier, the £10 tier, you get a producer credit on the mainline episode. So this one goes out to a guy named Leon Langford. Beautiful Welsh name, Leon. I can't really think of a pun now, though. The customary pun.
Leon is spelled double L-I-O-N. And my God, he's a lion. He's a Welsh lion.
Oh, he's a lion of a boy.
Yeah, he's a
good
old
enough.
Langy.
Good enough, I reckon.
The roar of the Leon Lion Langford.
I do like lion, and then Leon Lion, and then you went old Langy. You know, just when in doubt, chop that surname in half and put an E on the end, Langy, and we're done. Yeah.
In Welsh football, they put an O at the end, so it was like. Oh yeah, Rambo, Balo,
Lango.
They just do it all. It's like so unimaginative, but every single one of them just their surname. And I mean, Rambo's quite good because it's like the it's like the guy Rambo.
Yeah,
but one of them, Wayno, for Wayne Hennessy. Wayno's
just, yeah. Who was that? Oh, it was Wayno. It's actually harder to say than just his name in terms of shit. Syllables.
Yeah. Asho.
Brilliant.
What
have you been up to, mate? Anyway,
I'm on a bit of...
Sorry, I swiftly moved on then. I was done with the Leon thing then. Sorry, I just fucking put my foot down. Apologies.
I've been on my honeymoon and to Mauritius, getting delicious in Mauritius. And
nice.
I fucking stupidly was playing the larrikin and I jumped off a boat into the sea with my fucking phone in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I took so many amazing photos. Like that day we saw sea turtles in the wild, monkeys in the wild, dolphins in the wild. Emma rode a boat and she was like, and I wanted to do really funny Instagram things and I'm the captain now because she was driving it with no one around her.
And you've deprived us of that now.
Yeah, I'm going to take it to the shop tomorrow and beg. Well, if anyone knows how to get my stuff, I tried to turn it on and the worst thing you should do when you jump into the water is you should just wait till you get home, dry it out. But I was like, why is it not coming on? And I was holding down the power button and then it like got so hot and it was like, oh shit.
Imagine it's fucking sparking around. Yeah. Like, what's going on?
I've jumped in the sea before with my phone in my pocket and you can bring it back normally if you just put it in rice and let it dry out. But this was like...
I've heard that little tale.
And I've done it.
I'm sure there must be some... There must be some boffin somewhere who can
recover
the goods,
I'm going to go in tomorrow, pop in and try and fix it because I had some really good photos on there.
But otherwise, if you can't get it fixed, mate, it never happened because if it's not on social media, you never had fun.
But then on our boat, so we went like on this like speedboat tour around some of the islands around there. And in the morning, there was a bunch of us like, it's weird, like in Mauritius, it was like a quite, it's a fancy hot honeymoon hotel. And it's quite la-di-da, but because it's all inclusive, you do kind of get, you still get a bit like rough and ready. Like there's still something about it.
I am convinced all inclusive. I've done all inclusives with the proper scallywins like me and you've been on when we went to Malgrat, probably one of the scattiest fucking places I think I've ever been. And then I've been to like stupidly posh for my honeymoon in Antigua and stuff.
Yeah.
Level inclusive, big fan of it, but no matter what level you're at, there's always a couple of scallies, always.
Yeah, and this year did have like quite a high scally percentage, and of course all the scallies are always British.
Had a high scally factor in Mauritius this
they
year.
They were all lovely, but it's like, and I've got tattoos, and I'm not fancy, but like they had a lot of tattoos, a lot of like really like leathery skin from basking in the sun for like 50 years. And
that's usually one of the first ways you can tell because they've obviously got a bit of money to be able to come do it every year, but like you can tell the absolute old tan leather skin.
So they were, obviously some of them did have quite a bit of money. Like one of them was working in Dubai for ages, but we went on this like boat trip and they're all from places like Aldershot and like Essexy Way and like on the ring belt outside of London, like the home country with quite a lot of money, but they're also a bit that. Let me just quickly get to my notes here because I did write some down. I had to email them to myself.
I thought you were saying I had to email a few of them, like you were out there and you went, look, I haven't got my phone on me anymore, but here's my email. All right, we can keep in touch.
No, I thought, well, do you know what? I'll try and remember. Like I do normally, I write, so I found my notes. I had to email them myself. And the people were like, well, one of them was called Brian and Mary, and they were like, if you, they were probably like 50, and they were exactly how you imagine them. They were like really lovely and pleasant to be around, but they were like, oh, it's a lovely place in here. I couldn't live here. Do you know what I mean? Oh, Brian last night. Well, he had the shits all night. And I was like, oh my God.
I can totally imagine. We go, oh, how long have you been married, Mary and Brian? Oh, 15 years. You get less for murder, don't you?
Exactly that. It's like, well, I've been married. It's like Brian says, oh, well, Mary's been happily married for 20 years. I've been happily married for one. And it's like that kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know?
Brian, what a legend.
And then by the end of it, so we're on this like a boat trip, and it was really like, it was beautiful, but then we got really boozy, and the guy brought out like loads of bottles of rum, and everyone was like very reserved in the morning and fucking being best mates by the end. We all added to a WhatsApp group together. And they were like, so Brian, every message he would put, he'd put an English flag at the end of it. So we'd say, amazing day, guys. You're lovely to meet you all. Thumbs up, smiley face, English flag, like constantly.
Patriot,
and I realized all boomers love fucking emojis. So like this guy was like, this guy from press was like, oh, fucking hell, Thatcher closed the fucking mines. I've worked in an open cast mine for 40 years. I fucking, the bastard's still having fucking repercussions. And then he was like, he was called Billy, and he looked like a human cannonball. He looked like a little frog man. Like he was so round. And he was like, fucking hell, man, I fucking love that shite, mate.
Does he look like, you know when you see like old school circuses and freak shows and it's the strong men and they just look like so barrel chested, don't they?
He was bizarre looking. I'll send you a photo of him. But it was really fun. But it was I was really glad when it was just me and Emma. I was like, right, let's sack these fucking dweebs.
Personable, mate, because me and Amy just kept to ourselves basically on our honeymoon. I had a chat with a few people, like when I'm sitting in the bar and Amy was swimming or something like that. I got chatting to some American guy about welcome to Wrexham, because he actually knew where Wales was.
Yeah,
I mean, when I said I was from Wales, he went, oh, Wrexham. I said, I don't know, Cardiff. And he was like, is that near Wrexham? And I was like, no, it's not. But you know, I appreciate that they actually, people abroad now, a lot of them know where Wales is. So that's,
Which wasn't the case.
No. Never used to be. I've chatted now and then to people, but no, a WhatsApp group with strangers on holiday.
It's probably why I jumped in the sea so my phone would die. we came back. We were meant to go for this. So we've been out all day on this boat and we were fucking howling by the end. We came back home to to the resort, and then we just all went straight to the bar. And the hotel had booked us this candlelit dinner on the beach on the sand because it was our honeymoon, and they like paid for it for us. It was like a part of the, it was like a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
But we got so fucked we didn't make it. Emma stumbled off. I stayed for probably about another half hour, and I was fucking, you know me, I can handle my booze. I was so drunk, and I was like, I was spewing so much. I pulled the muscles on top of my back because I was pulling, and I'm never ever sick. And then in the morning,
I was
going to
say, you're not
sick.
A sickie boy.
No, I'm not. No, but we just drank and we ate nothing at all. And we were both absolutely hammered. But it was really fun. And I was going to say, they're not too much to regale from it because we just fucking sat, ate, and drank and, you know, were merry.
Oh, mate, that's what we did. But the thing is, that's what an all-inclusive is for me. Like we looked at some activities because we were like, oh, let's get out of the resort for a bit. The problem was all the activities were like 8 hours long, you know, like, we're going to take you over the whole island and all this sort of stuff. And it was like, I don't want an 8-hour, you know, I need like 4 hours in the morning, take me up to lunch. Yeah, and then I want to get back to the sunbed and just get my booze in again.
And I was on like a steady booze the entire time, and I'm surprised I've not put more weight on, because like I was really thinking this is going to be fucking a lot, but I was kind of swimming quite a bit in the sea every morning, so hopefully that's
sweating it out, mate, in the heat as well.
Sweating
it out.
The only other thing I was going to mention was on the way back we had the worst turbulence like I've ever experienced, and we booked us. So on the way out there, we sat up on the top deck and had like just the two of us sat next to each other, and it was near the front. And apparently, nearer the front is better, and it's just the two of us on the side. Like it didn't feel that it was. Like, we did have turbulence, but it wasn't bad. On the way back, we sat back down below and at the very, very, very last seats in the middle, and apparently that is the worst place, because at the front you're like you're a bit more sturdy, and at the back the plane does shake, it like it's naturally for it to,
you're
like,
wobbling
and all the stewardesses had to sit down. They were serving food, and they were serving food through most of the turbulence, but then they got told to sit down, and then the trolley started shaking. It was going up and up and up, and like they had to like try to secure the trolley. Then like the baggages and all that stuff was falling down, and Emma, who hates flying, was getting so upset. And she was like crying like quite a bit. And I was trying to, it took my mind off it because I was like comforting her. But then there was like a literal nun dressed in nun outfit sat opposite us doing like the Hail Mary.
And then, reciting the Lord's Prayer.
And then because we were at the back, and the back is where the air stewardesses sit. And the lady sat next to me and she was squeezing the two, like the hands, you know, the what's it called, the armrest, and she was like squeezing that. Yeah. And like I was like, oh shit, even she looks nervous. And I
you say like the air hostess is going, there's something wrong, this isn't normal.
This isn't normal. Like, but
panicking everyone.
She did seem a bit stressed, but like I don't know. It obviously happens all the time, but it was like drastic. It was bad. And I was for a second, I was like, oh, I tried to pray. I was like, oh, please God, if get me through this, I'll be good again. But it offered like pretty much no comfort. So then I turned to like nihilism. Yeah. I thought, oh well, it's all out of my hands, and started thinking of like the Morrissey and the Smiths song, you know, to die by your side, what a wonderful way to die. and then me and Emma turned to each other, and we just kind of said like I love you, and being a bit dramatic, but I was like, oh, this is quite scary. But then the only genuine thing that calmed me down was and nurtured me was booze, because I was already double parked. And like
I was about to say, thank God they'd already sorted out your drink order.
And I made friends with one of the steward people, and I was like, can you just double me up every time? I said, I'm gonna do you a favor. I said this to her, so I was like, I'll do you a favor, and instead of you having to come back, just double me up every time. And so I had
I'll save your legs a trip, darling. Yeah.
Oh, darling, do you know that? You ain't leave a trolley with me, right? Leave a trolley with me, you know what I mean? So I had like booze next to me already. So I had like and it was going on for a while. It wasn't just like one bit of jumping up, like I'd say for like 5 minutes it was going up and up, and that takes quite a while when you're just contemplating death. So I had like my beer and my rum chaser, and I was just like drinking them, and that really, really did calm me. And it's just another shining example of why the gods of booze are surely the only gods for us.
They're always the most benevolent, aren't they? Yeah. I love how you started to pray as well. Did you do the classic, if I make it out of this, I'll start believing in you, and then it's all bollocks anyway, isn't it? Yeah.
I did the peep show. Oh, come on, God, do this and I'll start believing in you. Well, it was quite a big coincidence. So I did a little prayer and I was like, oh, well, I've done that. So I didn't really have it feel any more relaxed. So I just, then the nihilism, the fuck it, well, I'm already up here, I can't do anything, I have to just embrace it. And then the last thing I'll mention from the honeymoon, when we were on there, because we were there for quite a while, Em was like, oh, so who are you missing? And we started discussing who we were missing, and she was like, oh, missing her mum and her brother and baby Bo. And she asked me, who was I missing? And I said, you and my friend Craig. And she was like, oh, I meant like family. I was like, they are my family, man.
Yeah, you went full Dom Toretto, didn't you? You start going, they are family. You never give up on family.
So that was just my summer holes before my honeymoon.
Before you said farewell to your phone as well, you were texting, making me very jealous with like the posts and everything. But when you text about like, oh, we've got to go on one of these all inclusives together, I was like, absolutely, amazing.
And like, that's one way we could get the wives on board as well, because it'd be pretty and they could look at the scenery and we could just.
And that's what I'll be doing then, is echoing you on that plane. We'll be saying to each other's wives, look, I'll do you a favour, right, and get out your hair, leave you girls to it, and me and Fras just have a look at the bars, is it? Yeah, yeah, all right then, we'll get out your hair.
Well, we've been yapping on long enough, so shall I hand over to you to tell us this week's
true crime thriller. We'll get on with it. So yeah, today is another true crime one, as Frank's mentioned, and I'm going to be prattling on about a Welsh convict called John Jones, or as he came to be known, Coch Bach y Bala, or Little Red of the Bala in English. The colour is because he was a redhead, apparently, so he was like the little red boy of Bala.
The red boy.
Little red boy. So old Jonesy, he was born in a village called Llanfod, a few miles from the town of Bala, around 1853. For those not clued up on Welsh geography, Bala is like sort of central North Wales. And Jones had a few professions in his youth, including a bricklayer, a joiner, a labourer, a seaman, and a stoker.
You like seamen, don't you?
Well, that's very good. I thought, are we going to get through that without a snide little comment from you? But no.
As if.
Yes. So, of all his many professions, though, he was actually best known for his poaching and thievery, both of which brought him in regular trouble with the law. So apparently he was regarded as a good worker when he was in an actual job. Yeah. But when he wasn't, he'd steal things left, right and centre, even if they were out of absolutely no use to him. he then stashed them in walls and hedges all over the countryside, and then he'd return to collect and sell them when he needed some cash. So needless to say, if you break the law enough times, you're going to get caught. And Jones broke it often, leading to him spending about half his life behind bars in on and off stints. And often when he'd been sent to prison, he'd be released early from his sentence for good behaviour. So he was a good worker and apparently a good inmate at the same time. He was also considered pretty savvy for someone of his background, and he often defended himself in court cases, which was sort of not done very often those days. But another thing that he loved was like the attention and the notoriety that came with it. So that often got him into some pickles as well. Like I said, he was a good worker, a good inmate, a clever bloke, and he did like the limelight a bit. But supposedly he was also a bit of a Billy bullshitter. So Jones would often... he would often boast about his thieving exploits and exaggerate a lot as well, claiming he'd stolen things he hadn't, even things that could easily be disproved at the time. So like he'd be sat with you, I nicked your wallet, didn't I? And it would still be in your pocket type thing, like being just so fucking blatantly wrong.
What is that though? Is that can't be his example?
I mean things that were so blatantly obvious that anyone could disprove it. You know, I stole the crown jewels or something you know, along those lines, like really over the top. And then his tendency to boast actually would often be the reason he wind up back in prison. So while Jones was a well-behaved prisoner, he also got a name for himself for escaping his incarceration on several occasions.
Do you know, it's not illegal in Germany to try and escape from prison? Because, really? if you do it here, that gets added to your sentence. Because in Germany, they believe it's like a natural innate ability, or an innate desire within the human nature to get freedom. So it's like, for them, it's like, you know, trying to breathe. You couldn't be arrested for breathing, because that's something innate within you. They do the same for attempt.
So is it... Do they slap something extra on your sentence in Germany if you do escape, though, if you actually get out? Or is it just like the attempt? They're like, look, we can't blame you for trying, but...
In some countries, escaping from prison is not against the law if the prisoner does not break any other laws or does not use force. So Germany, Austria, Belgium, Netherlands and Sweden, in these countries, the law is based on the idea that it's human nature to want to escape. So prisoners who escape without breaking other laws are not charged and their sentence is not extended.
Ah. I suppose that's if you're not hurting anyone in the process, I guess.
Good luck to your son.
Good on him, I say. Anyway, what was I? So, this first escape was in 1879 at the age of 26. He was awaiting trial in Ruthin Jail for stealing 15 watches. Loved the watches, apparently. To this day, it's unknown how he did it, but Jones managed to open his own cell doors somehow, along with the cell doors of three other inmates. Together, the four prisoners walked calmly out the front door of the prison while the majority of the staff were having their dinner. and as soon as they were clear, they just split up into the night. So after this, a £5 reward was offered for any info leading to Jones's capture. That's about 483 quid I worked out on the inflation calculator in today's money. 3 months later, he was recaptured while he was sleeping in a pub called the Swan Inn in Colwyn Bay. Apparently, it was a tip-off from a customer that had been drinking with him earlier that night, and he was bragging about how he stole 15 watches and then escaped prison 3 months ago. So, and then when he was recaptured, Jones was slapped with a much harsher sentence. As we said before, this wasn't Germany, so he didn't get a free pass for trying to escape. Jones's second escape attempt was then in the year 1900, when he was 47 years old. This one didn't go so to plan. He was awaiting transfer to Dartmoor Prison from Carnarvon after he'd been convicted of a £10 burglary, or just over a grand in today's money. He stole this from Waterman's Arms in Amlwch, although Jones insisted it was the police had framed him for that.
I'm innocent, my liege.
He's just gone, well, I wouldn't steal from the pub, my lord, I loved the pub. So yeah, he was awaiting this transfer now to Dartmoor Prison, and he knew full well he'd be slapped with a huge sentence. So he decided to barricade the door of his cell with parts of a weaving loom that was in the room with him before starting to tunnel through the floor. But this just didn't work. Turns out the floor was like rock solid. So he like barricaded it, made a big fuss. He was like, I'll dig out quickly. And then he was like, oh shit, it's like rock solid stone. Can't do that. So he got slapped with another hefty sentence because he added another escape attempt onto his sentence on top of the £10 thievery. So fast forward another 6 years, and shock horror, Jonesy Boy was facing another conviction, this time for something a bit horrible, actually. So he robbed a 7-year-old woman, which is pretty bad anyway, but he also ferociously attacked her, in quotes. So it's a shame because he was it's a shame he's actually an actual bastard, because up until this point, I was thinking he was a bit of a lovable rogue, you know, like a bit of a cad.
Yeah.
They always got to do that, though, haven't they? They've got to piss on their chips and fucking go one step too far. Too far, Jonesy, too far. So in this instance, during his hearing, he managed to keep the court sat until 3 a.m. by delivering an address to court that lasted hours upon hours upon hours. So he'd like written this absolute spiel just because he was allowed to say like a bit of last words or whatever.
Yeah.
He managed to keep the court in there until 3 a.m. It didn't do anything to sway the verdict, though, and he was given 7 years at Dartmoor Prison, a sentence which he served in full. And didn't get off for early for good behaviour this time either. So that was the first, like one of the first full sentences he actually served out. Not long after his release, he fell foul of the law yet again after breaking into a solicitor's office. That ended him back up in Ruthin Jail, the site of his first successful prison break. While the staff there changed, they all knew about Jones's breakout back in the day, and so they were extra vigilant with him, despite the man being about 60 years old at this point. Jones sat tight awaiting the results of an appeal he had filed, but one day a letter came stating his appeal had been rejected, and so Cóch Bac Bála conspired to escape Ruthin Jail once more. Months went by and Jones kept his head down, by all accounts being the perfect prisoner for the guards, before he overheard he was being transferred to Stafford Jail within a few months. Using a fork, he chipped away at his cell wall during the night to create a hole only about a square foot in size. He then made a rope out of his bedding to climb down the outside wall after squeezing through the hole he'd made. He lowered himself onto the chapel roof, climbed over the kitchen roof and onto the prisoner's outer walls, where he leaped off into a hay cart, Assassin's Creed style, that belonged to a neighbouring farm. How fucking lucky is that as well? A little, like, I'm assuming jumping off the wall would have fucked your legs otherwise. But yeah, just happened to be a cart there.
You say Assassin's Creed. To me, it just reminds me of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. They do a
That's
lot of
even
the old
better,
guy.
Actually. I should have done that one, yeah. Because they actually do it as it, like you would do with like the sort of the legs first type thing, as opposed to like diving head first.
Yes, the old swan dive.
But prison guard doing the rounds, he noticed Jones's cell was empty when he went to check on him, and he notified the governor, triggering the hunt for Cóch Bac Bála once more. Jones was on the run for 5 days in the wilderness, stealing food from small villages where he could find it. He tried to make his way back to his hometown of Bala, but on October 6th, 1913, he was spotted by a 19-year-old lad called Reginald Jones Bateman, who was out hunting. Sounds like the name of someone who would be hunting, doesn't it?
Reginald
Jones Bateman. Yeah. So Reggie Boy instantly recognised Jones and told him to surrender, using his rifle to hold him at gunpoint. Jones fancied his chances. Bear in mind, this guy's 60 years old now. And he wagered if he could make it to the forest line, he'd be in the clear. So he legged it, I imagine, very slowly. And then Reginald shot at Jones, hitting him in the leg, and it sliced right through his artery.
Oof.
So Jones died within 5 minutes due to blood loss, leading to Reggie being charged with manslaughter.
I was going to say, how does Reggie get to pick? He's not just
He was acquitted, actually. But he did originally get charged, but yeah, they let him off. I don't know if maybe, I'm assuming he was making the argument that he was a escaped criminal, you know, and he felt scared or something. Who knows? Yeah. But anyway, yeah, he got off on the manslaughter charges.
Do-gooder. Little nerdy well. Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if shooting would be my first thing. Yeah. I'd be like, if he's posing a threat, maybe hold him up at gunpoint, yeah. No problem. But like, you know, if he's just like, I'm just gonna go to the tree line over there, you'd be like, yeah, all right.
He's like that farmer who shot that guy in the back. Do you remember that story in like the late '90s or early 2000s? That was like really pop, really big story.
Oh yeah, yeah, it is ringing a bell. I can't remember the details, but no, yeah.
Me, but I remember like it was like these two scally teenagers were robbing this poor farmer's like land, but then the farmer shot them, and then like he was like, "Oh, I was defending yeah. myself," but he shot them in the back as they ran away, and it was like,
"Yeah, obviously running away to yeah. For, yeah for safety." And they saw a gun, went, "I won't yeah. deal with that," and then yeah, bang.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, that's how old John Jones died. Koch Bachabala was laid to rest 3 days later, and despite being a thieving bastard, he became a popular local figure, with a lot of his tales being exaggerated after his death, which I'm sure he would have loved. This even led to some absolutely morbid entrepreneur selling photographs of his funeral as postcards. And he earned loads of money out of it as well. So imagine that, just turning up. Any of his family, like, what are you doing? I'm just taking photos. Why? Going to sell them. Going to sell them, actually. The tales of escape and the same kind of boost singers get for their album sales when they die, that earned Koch Bachabala a new moniker of the Welsh Houdini as well. So that was like a later nickname attributed to him. And that's the tale of Jonesy Boy, the Welsh Houdini, a.k.a. Koch Bachabala.
Well, I know what song we're having to play on this. It's Mike Stevens, About Houdini. I think we put on here a few times. So that'll be...
Gotta be done, yeah. That's
a great one. Be done. We do know a scoundrel, don't we?
We do, yeah. Like, we always warm up to him too early as well, yeah. don't we? And then find out that he's been fucking horrendous. Yeah. And then go, oh.
I was going to say, I've just been doing about a TV episode. And I was like, oh, this guy's such a legend. He's so cool. And then he does something truly fucking horrific. And I go, oh, yeah, I forgot he is a murderous pirate. It's like, yeah. I get too good. I just get centered around the Welsh aspect. And I go, oh, yeah, he's Welsh.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. We're happy to have that. Tremendous bias for the Welsh as well. When they do something wrong, we're like, hey, look, we're all human. We
He's
all make mistakes.
Product of the time. You don't know yeah, better.
yeah, everyone was assaulting bloody 71-year-old women back in that day. For God's sake, can't judge them for that.
That's the thing. It's sometimes you get a little bit Welsh blindsided, don't we?
Especially if the first couple of capers they're involved with are like quite mans and a bit funny. You're like, oh, what a legend. And then, oh, right, they did something horrendous. Yeah. Fair enough.
So, a little teaser for our next episode as well, Bad TV.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, that was very good. Good little Brawd Houdini, the little Welsh terror.
The little he sounds like a right little... Cunt. I can imagine him, as long as he didn't nick from you, I can imagine that the... him being one of those characters that just prop up the bar and you just hear him talking bullshit all night going, I stole that. Well, you know, the Mona Lisa. Yeah, stole that.
Quite a sad little figure. Have you seen the photo what he looks like?
I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, the little mugshot of him. He looks a bit like he's got, you know, the brother in... has he got Arthur in Peaky Blinders?
Oh, I have seen it. Yeah, he does look a bit like him with his like, he's got a proper big mustache and
and a bit of a like just a sad little haggard face. Isn't the brother? Isn't that guy the actor like a bit of a meth addict?
You know, the guy idea. The guy who plays Arthur in Peaky Blinders.
I saw like something on TikTok the other day. Like he's either playing for a role or he's had some like poor affliction with drug addiction. But I think he's looking a bit.
Oh, don't know.
Yeah. What no a fun idea, way mate. To end the pod.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, we haven't done a pod in a while.
Just, I would say the Google searches of that of Arthur Peaky Blinders method are just going to go a peek after this. Now,
should we have a little look? Arthur Peaky Blinders. What's the actor called? Let's see if this is just slander. Paul Anderson. Paul Anderson. Paul Anderson. News. Peaky Blinders. Oh no, yeah, he's got the headline of The Independent. Drunks. Peaky Blinders has opened about his struggle about after health concerns.
Anderson pleaded guilty possession of Class A crack cocaine. Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah, poor fella. So yeah, I don't know. This is petered out. Sorry, man.
Well, hashtag pray for Paul, isn't it? Right.
Pray for Paul.
Cool. And, pray for Paul. See you later.
Sorry. Bye.
Ta-da.
Bye. Sorry, I derailed that at the end.
It's all good, man.